I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia.
We need tough laws. We need fair laws. But when these people come into our country and come in illegally, and then they're dispersed throughout the country, and all of a sudden you see nests of MS-13, you know, it's like you're liberating towns. We send ICE in.
That was President Trump talking on July 3rd about MS-13. He's used the gang to argue for a tighter U.S.-Mexico border and for more deportations. But MS-13 has a complicated history that goes back to the Cold War, to the civil wars in Central America, to El Salvador in particular. Jonathan Rosen joining us here in our Philadelphia studio. He's an assistant professor of criminal justice at Holy Family University, which is here in Philadelphia. He has been studying Central American gangs for some time now. In fact, interviewed some 1,200 gang members in El Salvador in prisons and rehab centers. Jonathan Rosen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me here.
So what is MS-13? How should we think about them today?
So MS-13, or Mara Salvatrucha, is a street gang. They were founded in Los Angeles in the 1980s. What we saw was during the Civil War in El Salvador, individuals fled and they came to Southern California. So one of the myths is that they were founded in El Salvador. No, they're actually founded in Southern California in the 1980s. Through various policies, actually deportation policies in 1996, the United States government began deporting members back to Central America. The estimates about how many people are in MS-13 today are only really around 10,000 in the United States. And I'd like to point out that there are 1.4 million gang members in the United States. So it is classified, I think, important as a gang. It revolves around identity, around the youth having certain identities, commonalities as being Salvadorian migrants to Southern California. Some people classify it as a guerrilla organization or as a drug cartel, and I think that's false. MS-13 is not a major player in transnational criminal and drug trafficking. The Treasury Department in 2012 has labeled it a transnational criminal organization.
And that would be under the Obama administration. That's
yes.
How they labeled MS-13.
Yes, and so that means they're prone to sanctions. But they're not the Sinaloa cartel or Los Zetas. I think it is important. They meet all the traditional research categories and definitions of what is a street gang.
A street gang. Let me just give out the phone number and also ways to join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at whyyradiotimes. So does anything differentiate MS-13 from any other street gang?
Well, I think MS-13 is known for violence. It has grown throughout Central America. The numbers range. Some people would say there are 70,000 alone in El Salvador. Some people say that the number of gang connections are almost 500,000, as in people who have gang ties. What you've seen is these kind of iron fist strategies by Central American governments that has led to increases in the prison population. And you've seen a lot of the leaders actually controlling things from behind bars, right? So a lot of the leaders from MS-13 are calling shots from the prisons in Central America. I think that as a street gang, they are known for violence. They are known for extortion, for different tactics, for playing a role in minor drug trafficking. Most of the research shows that they're mainly an extortion racket.
Extorting who, though?
Well, so local businesses, if you're in the United States, for example, or in Central America, you operate in a certain neighborhood, you have to pay what they call rent to the gang, and that's their primary source of revenue. So if you're a bus driver, you're a taxi driver, if you operate within their territories. So gangs, their goals are to control territory, right? And their goals are to expand. The arch enemy of MS-13 is the 18th Street Gang, who actually has more members in the United States than MS-13, about double. As my colleague Jose Miguel Cruz, who I participated in the study with, points out in his recent article in the Washington Post. So their goal is to expand and control territory and to recruit young individuals. So most of the people they recruit are young, poor males. 90% of the people we found in our study were males. All of them were from low, marginalized communities, very poor backgrounds. I'd be happy to go into more details about that.
And fair enough. And I should say to our listeners that it looks like in this country you're more likely to find MS-13 in Los Angeles, parts of District of Columbia around the capital, Long Island. And you mentioned me even before going on the air, maybe Allentown?
Yeah, certain parts of Pennsylvania. So mainly L.A. and D.C. have been the strongholds. You have large Salvadorian immigrant communities in Los Angeles and D.C. as well. But I think it's important to note, and our study found this, that 91% of the people that joined MS-13 or gangs in our study of about 1,200 that's available online never have been to the United States. They joined in Central America. So this kind of argument that the president is making that they're all coming through and joining, MS-13 was founded in the United States. So I think it's a myth to say that just everyone comes over and immediately joins a gang.
You're saying it's homegrown, and if it's expanding, it's expanding within this country because it's homegrown here.
So I think you're seeing expansions in Central America of the gang there. But in the United States, what you're seeing is people who are joining are already here, many of them. Right. And so they're recruiting and trying to expand and recruit youth and some migrant communities as well. But you are not seeing that, you know, it is important to remember that MS-13 expansion among people in the United States are people who are already living here.
The president has a number of times featured families who have been targeted by MS-13, even lost family members to MS-13. How are we supposed to understand that?
So I think you do see that. MS-13, and I want to be very clear, is involved in violent, brutal acts, right? They are involved in criminal activities. Gangs are involved in crime. And you have seen horrific acts occur. But I think it's important to note that that we have violence and street gangs throughout the United States. As I mentioned, there are 1.4 million gangs. There are more members of the Bloods, for example, than MS-13. So I think saying that it's, you know, national security threat number one is an over-exaggeration. Yes, they are a ruthless gang. Yes, they are powerful. And I think they are the most powerful in Central America. But we do have many criminal organizations in the United States operating.
When we hear about people fleeing Central America, coming to the U.S. border, and they talk about gangs threatening them, killing them, kidnapping them, really running for their lives, are they referencing MS-13? Is MS-13 one of a number of gangs targeting people?
Yes, yes. And so people that come over apply under a convention against torture. So they're applying on an international convention. If someone fleeing violence from Central America comes over to the United States and asks for asylum, what they're trying to say is under the law, and this is, you know, currently changing with Sessions and the Trump administration's interpretation, but the International Convention Against Torture saying that if they go back, there's a 50% chance or more that they will be killed. Mm-hmm. So people applying you see many of these cases of young women, young children being forced recruitment. You do see forced recruitment in MS-13. You do see MS-13 is a violent organization that will come to certain neighborhoods in Central America and say, you're going to pay us rent or we will kill you or harm you. You're going to join our gang. And so you do see people fleeing violence. It is important to remember that in 2015, El Salvador surpassed Honduras as the most violent non-warring country in the world with a homicide rate of 104. Per 100,000.
Wow.
Now, that dropped recently a little bit in the last couple of years to about 60. It was 80 the year before. But so you're seeing this level of violence leading to individuals fleeing Central American countries, what we call the Northern Triangle of Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras.
And that's Jonathan Rosen joining us on Radio Times to talk about MS-13, frankly, what it is and what it isn't and how it got started. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Earl from, looks like Manahawkin, New Jersey, to join our conversation. Earl, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi there.
I'm related to people that are on police departments in Ocean County, New Jersey, and I can tell you definitively that MS-13 and there are other Latin American gangs, whether they come from Mexico or Guatemala or wherever, or whether they're homegrown, your commentator's argument is the same as a politician not cutting a budget because they could only save $10 million by if they, you know, find money to save on a program. But meanwhile, if they find 100 times of saving $10 million, they can save $1 billion. So I find that your argument is the same kind of thing. Why would you want to have more gang members?
I don't think you're hearing an argument that we want more gang members here, Earl. It's not the greatest phone line, but let me take your question and put it to our guest, Jonathan Rosen.
Yeah, no, please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not advocating gangs or having more gangs by any means. I think there are underlying structural issues of why individuals join gangs. I'm a big proponent of the rule of law, and so I'm not advocating gangs or gang membership by any means. I just am not saying that MS-13 is not the only criminal organization. I think there are underlying issues as well of solving structural issues, dealing with education, prevention, preventing youth from joining gangs. So I don't want to be misunderstood by saying, sure, I'm advocating gangs by any means. And MS-13 has been involved, along with other organizations, in violence. So please don't misunderstand what I'm saying.
Absolutely, Earl. I appreciate, though, the call to Radio Times and certainly for that clarification. So you have interviewed a number of gang members of MS-13. You mentioned the fact that they're young and male. I don't think that would surprise anybody. What does MS-13 give them?
So what we found is a lot of the youth who join, and some of them are recruiting as young as 5 years old, 8 years old.
What would a five-year-old do for MS-13?
Well, what I think they want is loyalty, and you want loyal soldiers. So if you're in a neighborhood that's gang-dominated, and you're in a neighborhood that's very poor, underprivileged, high levels of inequality in Central America, there's this element of loyalty. And you saw kids joining from MS-13 because they were getting beat up in communities. They had the sense a gang provides them with identity. It also provides them with resources. So we saw a lot of these young kids joining the gangs, and again, it is a youth street gang. There are some older members, but those are some of the leaders, but the majority are young kids.
Like teenagers?
Yeah, teenagers. You know, gang members don't expect to live to 40 years old, so they have this very violent life. And so there's this element of loyalty, this element of identity, resources as well. But we found, too, in our studies and in the research that my colleague Jose Miguel Cruz has done over the past 20 years, is that gang members come from extremely violent homes. Right. And so domestic violence and all these things push people to flee and to run out and to join a gang. So what I would say is that this element of dealing with prevention, dealing with why do people join gangs. Right. And our whole study was, can you leave a gang? Is it possible? Because most people think you're in a gang. There's other, and often you'll see 3 points in tattoos that they'll tattoo. It's basically death, the cemetery, or the hospital, excuse me, or prison. Those are kind of the future.
That's your future.
That's your future. So what I would argue is this element of prevention and also trying to, you know, the what we call gang desistance or leaving a gang.
Let me, I'm sorry, I'm getting several messages coming at me at the same time. So can they leave a gang? I mean, can you leave MS-13?
It's possible, but it's very difficult. I think what we found, and it was a different context, we were looking in Central America, right? That the main mechanism for leaving was through the church, through a religious experience. So you saw some people come tired of the gang life. It's expected that you will go to prison if you are a gang member, mm-hmm, in our context of our study in El Salvador. And so we saw that it is possible to leave, but it's not easy. There's a large supervision process. And you do also have enemies. You saw gang members too, particularly in Central America, had tattooing as a major part of their identity. So that becomes an issue in reinsertion as well. If you have gang tattoos on your face or different parts of your body, that makes their elements for discrimination harder to find a job and employment. And a lot of these youth, the reality is they haven't their life has been involved in the gang, right? So they're what we call disconnected youth. They're not going to school. They're not working. They're involved in gang life. What skill set do they have?
And is rehab possible? I mean, in individual cases, and I do want to get Carolyn from Philadelphia to join us, but
it is possible, but it's very difficult. Right. It's very difficult, but it is possible. I've seen cases of individuals being successfully reinserted, but it's also having the civil society reach out and work with people to help former gang members reinsert themselves into society.
Not everyone wants to do that.
Correct.
Let me get Carolyn from Philadelphia to join us. Hi, Carolyn. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks very much for this program.
Sure.
I appreciate the work that Jonathan's been doing. I worked with MS-13 in El Salvador in the early 90s, and I have continued to work with groups Homies Unidos in El Salvador and a branch that's now in Denver that's working to reform youth and get them to really get out of the violent lifestyle. My question, or what I would like Jonathan to add, is what were the U.S. foreign policy and Salvadoran policies during that terrible time in the 80s when so many people fled and when families had to go to the U.S. and were pleading for refugee status and never got it and the lives that their children had to be thrown into? And that, to me, really fed and bred the growth of this gang. And these policies fed the growth of the gang lifestyle, and that has continued since. And I don't think there's enough discussion of what the broader foreign policy issues are that keep folks in gangs.
Sure.
And it's not just the violence in the families.
Well, and Caroline, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And there is a whole history, especially of U.S. involvement in the civil wars in Central America. Jonathan, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a very good question, a tough question to answer in a short amount of time.
Is.
But
I
think it's a great point. I think you saw such a violent period in the Civil War, major human rights abuses, major issues, and people fleeing the violence. But you've also seen underlying structural issues in El Salvador today. Right, you've seen high levels of corruption. The previous president, Mauricio Funes, has allegedly stole $250 million and went fleeing to Nicaragua. Tony Saca stole another $300 million. So you've seen this legacy of corruption, impunity, and violence continue. Now, El Salvador, the history is, as you mentioned, as the caller mentioned, is very important, has a very complicated history of the peace process and the involvement. And the current party is the FMLN, which were the former fighters. And then they've kind of come into power. And so that's a complicated history. But I think what I would point to is these underlying structural issues of poverty, inequality, violence that are present in the Northern Triangle countries that help breed and foment disconnected youth who sometimes feel that their only option is joining a youth street gang.
Caroline, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. So, and you're right, Jonathan, we didn't do justice to the U.S. involvement in this part of the world. But certainly we supported a lot of very right-wing governments and organizations as well. Thank you for joining us on
Radio
Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And that's Jonathan Rosen. He's an assistant professor of criminal justice at Holy Family University here in Philadelphia, has been studying Central American gangs, and has interviewed members of MS-13. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.